Hi, this is Brian with Zen and the Art of Manufacturing podcast. And today we have with us Jason Gus, who's the CEO and founder, I guess, co-founder of Iterate Labs. How many founders are there of Iterate Labs?
There's two of us. It's myself and then our CTO, Apoorva.
Gotcha. Yeah. So Iterate Labs is pretty cool technology. I'll summarize and then you can add where I screwed up, but it's really a connected worker platform, right? So like, whereas like our company tracks more machines and assets on a factory floor, you're interested in the people.
Exactly. Yeah. There's very much an analogy to sensor tracks, right? So we're focused very much on that workforce. We have a smartwatch platform where we digitize worker movements, actions, and location, and really help connect those to manufacturing KPIs for production and safety in real time.
So how did you guys come up with this? Like what sparked that?
Yeah, so both founders, we did our PhDs over at Cornell. We were friends and collaborators on one of my first research papers. And really with our backgrounds and interests, it kind of spurred. So my background, I have a focus on injuries, biomechanics and human performance. That's what my PhD was focused in. And then Apoorva comes from an industrial background, working up in steel manufacturing and automotive plants earlier in his life. And then his PhD was more on biomedical devices and advanced manufacturing techniques. So with all of that, spending countless hours in the basement on research projects together, the idea blossomed of, let's combine our interests and our knowledge to help improve and fit these workforces today with technology that can help them improve their performance while staying healthy and safe.
Yeah. It's cool. Thanks for the background. One of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast is kind of the non-technology side of things. Like we have a lot of lean consultants on, and we talk about cultural change and things like that, like how you get folks to adopt technology. And what you guys have is, a watch essentially that can measure and detect movements, hand movements and stuff like that. How does that go over, when a company decides to buy that? Do people feel like, you're being big brother and watching every move, or how does all that work?
Yeah, so we've gotten that question a fair amount. But in reality, the reception from the workforce has honestly been extremely positive and extremely encouraging. So a lot of these jobs are very manual, repetitive, sometimes boring processes. So having a piece of technology that can really digitize their actions, and then you can provide scores and feedback to them, actually has had a really positive impact. So they've become more excited, more engaged, really excited about seeing their data. And then just from an adoption standpoint, when we present it to the worker from the managers down, that there's really a safety benefit, we're trying to understand how they're performing, if they're going beyond their certain standards or their means. It's really at the end of the day for helping to keep that worker safe and healthy, to make sure they're working at set standards that the company has to protect them. And so that's really, I think, the emphasis. One is when you're presenting it from a safety health benefit, it really helps to encourage adoption. And then we've seen really big improvements on the lines where we deploy for turnover reduction as well from like a gamification standpoint. So I'd say those are, I guess, the general feedback I'd have on that.
How's it helped with turnover reduction? That's really interesting.
Yeah. So what we've noticed, it's really from two perspectives. So one is that managers and supervisors who are often disconnected from that frontline worker because they don't have data on them. They have, a workforce of 50, 100 people maybe, and they need to be in charge of that. So they can see macro trends or people when there's an injury that occurs, right? But anything in between, there's a lot of blind spots. So this, from one standpoint, helps to foster engagement between managers and supervisors to those workers that need it. Whether it's a worker that's, performing amazing and doing a great job, that's a worker you do not want to lose to turnover. So having that manager speak to them and recognize them is great. We've had now recently with a couple of our customers where workers that are performing from the best productivity and safety standpoint have been recognized and actually have been subsequently promoted. So really shows kind of the benefit and that path that can occur when you are performing and operating at like a high level. And then the other aspect is a gamification side of thing, which we continue to evolve and roll out new features and value there. So right now, what we have deployed is essentially a dashboard that gets displayed in public areas, whether it be a cafeteria or a break room, and it'll show the top performers of the week. And the company has the ability to choose whether it's based on, say, attendance or safety or productivity outcomes. They can choose that. And just having that positive recognition in a public area is really had a big impact. And so we've seen reduction in turnover rates as high as about 60 to 70% on some of the production lines we've been deployed on. So really a big impact. And we know, as I'm sure you know, many of the manufacturers out there right now, workforce availability and turnover is one of the biggest battles that companies are facing.
Keeping people, hiring people, developing people. We hear that over and over again. Yeah, the last podcast I recorded, it hasn't been released yet. It almost focused entirely on how do you hire and retain people in this market, which just seems impossible.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough. We hear that from all of our customers. I think no one's necessarily figured that out. I think a lot of that, as I'm sure you probably covered in your last podcast, is company culture and the management team. And supervisors teams, they have a big impact from site to site in terms of those levels.
Yeah, retention for sure. There's a saying that people don't quit jobs, people quit people.
I think that point is strongly heard.
Interesting. So tell me a little bit more about like the safety side of it. Like how does that factor in? Is it like repetitive stress injuries or what?
Yeah, so essentially we tackle safety from a few perspectives. Our overall goal rate is focused on musculoskeletal injuries. So the common ones would be strains or sprains or, like you said, repetitive motion type, like carpal tunnel, for instance. And essentially, we look at a few factors throughout that day on that worker's performance. So we'll look at posture. We'll look at speed of movement. We'll look at the time, the number of repetitions. We'll look at performance metrics such as cycle time, and is that cycle time changing throughout the day? Is it going below or above a certain standard that might put them at more risk? So essentially, we look at all of these factors as a way to determine if someone's at a higher risk of injury based upon their movements and motions and the other patterns we see in the data. So that's how we look at it from a safety perspective.
And so do I get, like, as a worker, I get the feedback on that from the like the gamification dashboards or whatever in the break rooms, or how does that work?
Yeah. So right now the data in terms of on the safety side is mainly provided to the managers, and mm-hmm. then the managers have the ability to communicate that and share that with workers. So that can be via a dashboard or a screen or via a mobile device. You can access it from any device like our data. And that's really just telling how they're performing, tracking how they're metrics have changed over the past week, tracking if there's any warning signs and such. Oftentimes, our customers will identify top performers from both a safety and productivity perspective, and then leverage them to help train other workers or use their motion and technique as part of the training platform.
So it helps with training too. I missed that earlier. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So are you in, what kind of industries do you guys usually focus on?
Yeah, so it does vary, and we're continually in the process of expanding. So generally, we're very much in just the manufacturing sector, I'd say, as a broad focus. Within that, there are a lot of different areas. So food processing, meat processing, companies that are in kind of cans, bottles and cans and jars, things like that. But then it goes beyond that, right? So there's other industries, buckle manufacturing, there's metal fabrication, there's kind of those, you know, I guess more random or niche manufacturing areas. And, you know, as we're expanding and growing, since, you know, we're still, an earlier stage company, we're just learning that there's really any manufacturing industry where you have a labor workforce that is performing some type of manual labor, There is applicability and value in our data and just the ability to have visibility into your workforce.
Which is pretty much every manufacturing company in the country.
Yeah, exactly. And I know you've said it on, whether it was a podcast or something, I think you've talked about like winning the day, right? And I think 100% any facility will recognize that without their labor workforce performing effectively and the ability to be there healthy, it's tough to win the day, right? And so I think that's kind of where we come at it from.
What do you think, where does this kind of stuff go in the future, do you think?
Yeah, so really, as we evolve, I think workers will continue to still be a part of the facility. Their roles may be slightly changed or varied. I think we're going to see a lot more cobotics, right? So workers working in sync with robots and machines. And really, our technology complements all of that. So from one instance, we're able to connect that worker to the facility in real time, right? So you can't have workers operating effectively with other robots, machines, and processing lines unless you know exactly what that worker is doing, how they're performing, where they are. So I see a tremendous fit from that aspect with our technology. Mm-hmm. I think continually upskilling workers and training them with data like ours is something that the platform will evolve and grow with. And then lastly, in any manufacturing facility, you can have hundreds to thousands of processes and machines. And by having detailed large data sets on humans performing tasks, you can understand what parts of a process, however small or large, may be most inefficient or unsafe for humans to perform. So using our data to help target specific targeted automation from that standpoint. And I think that's really how we see it all kind of fit together and evolving as an industry.
Yeah, that seems to be like a common one, is getting the data to really justify investments in certain things. Like the most obvious things that should be automated are anything that's highly repetitive, right?
Yeah.
And those jobs are not fun to do. People don't typically like them. They lend themselves to injuries if you're doing the same thing over and over again. So it makes a lot of sense. We see the same thing on the machine side. So, is there something that is running slower than it should be? Those kinds of things to replace them.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Yeah. What are you guys thinking about getting into other technologies with that too? Or is it just going to be focused on, like wearables?
Yeah, so we're actually in the process of rolling out some computer vision applications as well, and we're in the process of piloting those. So really, as we look at the growth of the industry, there are really applications for computer vision, applications for wearables, applications for other sensor technologies, and really leveraging a platform where you can have all those features communicate to each other and have the value of each is really where we're going towards as a company. So we're rolling out some computer vision applications as well, and we'll probably be investing more time and resources there as well as we grow.
Yeah. Do they work together?
Yeah. So right now that's where we're at, is syncing kind of those two applications together. And that's kind of like the holy grail where you get the benefit of both worlds, is syncing those data together so you get the whole picture. And that's where we're moving.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I've seen some proof of concepts of things like that. Microsoft did some a couple of years ago. And it was kind of cool from a safety and a bunch of different perspectives. Like somebody walked into. Yeah. Here's my question. So this one I think is super interesting. So when you guys go into a plant, right? So you have the watches, you deploy the watches, you have to train your models to figure out, cycle times. They have to learn some stuff. But what does it look like from there? Like, how do you get buy-in from the rest of the business beyond the people that bought it to use it? So like, for example, I'm a line worker. Mm-hmm. Let's say I work at a bottling plant, right? And I'm taking bottles and I'm putting them into six packs. Okay. You put the watch on me, it doesn't really affect my daily life, right? Not right now. So you're going to learn some stuff. The supervisors are going to have to look at that data. Their managers are going to have to look at that data. How do you get all these people engaged and on board with doing that?
Yeah. So I think that goes with kind of any deployment of any new technology, is that there definitely has to be some initial engagement between the company and the key stakeholders, right? So from that standpoint, engaging with those key project leads and making sure they feel and see the associated value with the technology. So that's something that we're really good at, is engaging with those people, having those weekly, biweekly, monthly stakeholder meetings for review. In terms of, ensuring they get the optimal amount of data and it fits into their, overall user experience, those are things that we continue to improve on, and that's why those stakeholder meetings are important to get feedback. So we have dashboards that are for multiple different levels of stakeholders, whether it's like a corporate person, whether you're a safety manager or a production manager, to limit the amount of data and or screens you might have to go through. We provide accessibility to that through various points of entry. So whether it's email and text for alerts or summaries, or you can log into our device from any mobile device or tablet or computer.
It just seems to be a challenge to get folks to one, adopt, and then once they've adopted and they kind of look at the stuff, then the question is like, now what?
Gotcha. Yeah, so I think from that perspective, are you familiar with like this like analytics journey curve? And yeah, it's something we try to, educate our customers in, right? And I think you need to get buy-in on that, and I think you need to have them have buy-in for incremental value gain along this journey and keeping eye on the bigger picture. But at the end of the day, all of these companies are in a large part operating blindly to some extent. And so that first part is just the descriptive analytics. And I think there's a lot of value there. And then you grow along that kind of analytics journey curve. So I think having buy-in there, but it's also for certain people, right? With you're familiar with the book, Crossing the Chasm or whatever, right? And the earliest adopters are like those innovators, and they're willing to put more effort in, deal with some type of bugs. Maybe it's not the perfect user flow. And I think going from that to the next portion of it, to the early adopters and so on, there's a lot that has to be done and implemented so that it's seamless and they see the value along the whole way. But I agree from your perspective, right? I think with technologies like ours, it needs to be seamless. I think value needs to be communicated every time they look or interact with our technology, and that's on us just to do it. So, one of the things I'm looking to roll out as a company is we have our metrics, but I'd love to tie those to specific dollar values for our customers. Yeah, so really what we're looking to move towards is tying every metric, every graphic you see on our screen and interface with dollar values for the customer. So if you saw this much worker downtime, or you saw this decrease in cycle time percentages or averages, or you saw this increase in associated safety score, let's connect that to specific dollar values for our customers so that they're always engaged in it. And I think the other aspect and why we're actually putting a lot more emphasis and focus on gamification on our R&D roadmap and for this summer and beyond, is really to make it more of a fun working environment and to get significant buy-in from that workforce, right? So that they're demanding it and wanting it, and more workers want to be on the platform, because that also helps to ensure that the systems are used more and then managers are integrated into everything as well. So that's kind of how we look at it from an engagement standpoint. I think any new technology company has to deal with these barriers, and especially in the manufacturing, where they have all of these systems, all of these data points, all of these tools that they need to be in control and gain data from. And it's, how can we make their lives easier without having to have them log into another system, right? And I think that's kind of the holy grail, just getting there.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because there's a shitload of technology in manufacturing. There's so many different systems. Like, if there's even a group called MESA, that's the Manufacturing Execution System. I don't even know if I'm getting the acronym right. Anyway, they developed this thing called ISA 95, which is like this hierarchy of software and tools that you should have in manufacturing. And it's like seven levels high. And, you know, I feel like our collective technologies and our competitors and things like that are just adding additional layers to this thing and just making it, well, in their world, making it more complex. But in reality, I think it collapses a lot of the stuff that you actually need to understand what's happening on the factory floor. A lot of people want to control what's going on, right? So like there's a command and control idea.
You cannot manage what you cannot measure.
Right. But if you have a better idea of what's going on out on the factory floor, the control aspect of it may ease up, right? And so then maybe you don't need all these different systems like ERP and MES. They're very good at controlling things. But maybe you don't need that because now you know everybody's doing what they should be doing.
Yeah, I think so, right? It's like now there's so many systems, there's so many variables. But once you start having a better idea of these systems or each variable, you might be able to reduce some of the other ones that actually have less of an impact on the end of the day. But yeah, I agree. There are a lot of technologies. Obviously, I agree that ours have value. I'm sure a couple of our competitors have value. But at the end of the day, yeah.
I don't know that you have any competitors, do you? I haven't seen any.
This is true. But from that standpoint, I think, you need to find a way to have a seamless kind of integration, work with the customers, provide value along the way. And it's, I think early on, it's not something that you can necessarily just automate. It requires human interaction and training, and you do have to go on site sometimes. And I think it's just part of the process.
Yeah. And everything does. I mean, the one thing that I've learned by doing this podcast is the processes and the people matter greatly as to whether or not the technology is really going to be successful and can really help folks. But the other thing that I've learned in the 6 years of doing this is that the people that have this kind of stuff, yours, ours, not to turn this into commercial for our respective softwares, but they will wipe the floor with their competitors with this information because you can't improve. I mean, how are you going to improve some of this stuff if you can't get visibility into it?
Yeah, no, 100%. And what's also interesting too is I'm sure you have some customers where they've got, you know, multiple sites. Even though it's the same customer and they may be doing the same processes and overall, there are so many differences just site to site and in terms of how they're succeeding and operating. And when you think about that, if it's the same customer doing this, you know, that variance from one customer to completely different customers got to be drastic. And so all of this, I think, stems from all of these unknown variables and things going on in the facility that they can't measure. And, you know, industrial IoT is going to help that. And solutions like ours are going to help bridge that gap. And now they can normalize. So all facilities are operating the same under this, you know, one corporate rather than all operating, you know, 50% the same, but then the other 50% widely different.
Yeah, it's interesting. Our multi-plant customers say the same thing. It's one of our larger ones that has four or five plants on our product. They all make different things, but they're all managed by the same set of metrics now. And they all talk the same language and they all can share information and how to improve things based on the fact that they all have the same metrics, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, that's a huge step forward. Because otherwise, yeah, it can be tough to share best practices if it's you don't have the same language to talk to talk through.
Yeah, definitely. Regarding either new tech or manufacturing, things like that, like where do you go to learn new things?
Yeah, so I'd say that conferences is always a good thing. I'd say one thing that's been nice about the virtual nature of everything is that you can attend a lot more conferences. From like a customer sales perspective, I found it not as effective, but from a learning perspective, I found it really helpful. So being able to go to more conferences and attend them, sometimes they're a lot cheaper too, but just virtual. So I think that's been a really good resource from that standpoint. I think generally just trying to stay up to date on what technologies are out there. So anytime there's a new report on industrial IoT or any trends, documents like that, just understanding what players are out there, who's succeeding and why, and understanding kind of, you know, the why I think is important to see if your technology or your roadmap can follow those trends. So that's probably where I go. Are there any ones that you go to that I'd be missing that are kind of your bread and butter?
I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, and surprisingly, I learn a lot from LinkedIn. I've even found it a pretty good place to ask questions and get feedback on new technologies and what's going on in the marketplace. Honestly, where I learn the most is from visiting customers, right? A bit self-serving there, but yeah, like every time I walk into
No, same. Yeah.
a
Agreed.
plant.
I didn't know if that was an appropriate answer because I don't know if that helps anyone else. But yeah, until you're in there and until you just have conversations with whether it's your customers or prospective customers, hearing what they're thinking about, what their top, two or three priorities are or problems, that's kind of where where the real learning is.
And what's crazy to me, this is completely off topic, but what's crazy to me is how big of a role Excel still has to play in this whole thing. Like in manufacturing, like you were talking about, you have all these different systems and they're all glued together by an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, it's crazy. If I told you know what's the leading industrial software, and the answer was Excel, you'd be very surprised. Yeah, no, agreed. It's one of those things where I think you're just so busy and you're fighting to win each day, right? And there's so many problems that arise that it's tough for them to get out of this, cycle sometimes. And we've seen it where we're working to deploy with someone and their top problem is something that we can help them solve, but it keeps just getting pushed off, a few weeks here or a couple weeks there. And then it's one of those things where you're swimming to try to stay afloat, but you can't like get out of the water. And if you could just use this the floaty device, you could get out of the water. But
I mean, I understand that happens in our business too. I'm sure it happens to you as well.
yeah, been there for sure. I'm swimming right now.
I would say conferences are really good too. Like I, especially the in-person ones, because I go talk to tons of people and look at all the new technology and try to figure out what they're doing with it. Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
No, agreed. We just got accepted to a conference presentation this fall, and it looks like they'll be doing in person. So I'm looking forward to getting back to like the in person related stuff.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. As much as I'm going to probably bitch about how bad my feet hurt walking around, you know, McCormick Place in Chicago and stuff like that, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be good. Yeah. What do you have a favorite book that you recommend for people, business or otherwise?
Let me think. I enjoy a lot on honestly, like kind of the social psychology side of things and that related to sales. So those are pretty interesting. So just happen to have this one too, Sell More Faster. So those are kind of sales related books.
I don't know that one. What's the gist of Sell More Faster besides selling more faster?
It's really for like early stage technology companies. It's by like tech stars. And just kind of strategy, honing in on the product, like the who, what, why, things like that. Yeah, I think that's probably it. I've got my bookshelf back here, but nothing's standing out right now besides just some like the classic ones, like 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, things like that.
I like that one too.
Oh, the Dale Carnegie ones are all great too. They're probably like cliche at this point, but like How to Win Friends and Influence. Those are just good kind of life books.
I've never read that actually.
I swear, Brian, it's like really good. Believe it or not, it's really good. Yeah.
I'm sure for more techie-oriented people like you and me, that is too. Cool. Anything you want to plug? How do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, if you're interested in learning more about our technology, feel free to go to our website, iteratelabs.co. Otherwise, you can always email me at jason.guss, jason dot guss at iteratelabs.co. I'd be happy to have a conversation and tell you about our technology.
Cool, thanks. So this has been Zen and the Art of Manufacturing with Brian and Jason Guss from Iterate Labs. And check us out and like us and subscribe and all that kind of stuff on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.